This is not the Wade Hutchinson show talking. This is actually the Israeli government talking to you. We are controlling Wade Hutchinson's thoughts, his mind. Everything you hear is not Wade Hutchinson. It's Pegasus. We've also hacked onto Wade Hutchinson's phone. And we found some pretty horrific porn searches from the website Pornhub. Gay atheist porn is one of the things that he's searched for, and we haven't, we weren't expecting this. We also didn't expect to find pictures of Anne Frank pleasuring Gestapo enforcers. In fact, we are so shocked, we're going to hand you back to Wade. Hello, everybody. Did we all get our phones hacked this week? Apparently I did. Apparently Pegasus hacked my phone and found some horrendous searches. Who would have thought I search for gay atheist porn? I've had such an interesting 2 weeks. Obviously, if you've been living underneath a rock, I wasn't here last week for obvious reasons. I managed to fall, amongst other things. So I've been in crutches. I had surgery done to my foot. It was the first for many things. The first time I've ever been under local anesthetic. First time I've ever had stitches or had surgery as well. And also first time I've been in crutches. I mean, I got all three for the price of one. That's incredible. I'm still trying to source this local anesthetic because I had the best 45 minutes of sleep ever. And I battle sleeping. I've always had trouble sleeping ever since I was in my teens. I generally struggle to sleep at night. That was the best 45 minutes I've ever had. So I'm trying to source this anesthetic from somewhere. And the best thing is after they woke me up, I don't know why they woke me up, but they woke me up and they asked me if I wanted an ice cream. So I said, why not? I mean, if you're going to offer me one, why not? I mean, you've woken me up from the best sleep I've ever had. I think I deserve an ice cream. But if there's one thing I've also realized since I've had crutches is that quite an arm workout. I mean, my arms are killing me. I had to go to my local hospital today for checkups. The doctors wanted to check my foot and see if it's still a foot. And the location where I live, I can't take the tram because if I take the tram, I still need to walk anyway. So I thought, okay, well, let me just walk. 45 minutes later, I got there. I was in a pool of sweat. And I felt like I just did a half-hour session of bench pressing the whole time. My arms were ringing me. It was quite the experience. So good thing is my stitches are coming out next week. They've actually pushed forward the dates. It was supposed to be next week, Friday. But you know, this African body of mine, it just heals. It's remarkable. So my stitches are actually coming out next week. I'm dreading that because I don't know what they give you. I don't know if they just say lie on the bed, close your eyes, and we're going to take the stitches out. I don't know. It's going to be a first for me. But yeah, I'm just happy that this ordeal is coming to an end. My foot was... on fire on Wednesday, and the only way I can describe this pain is, you know, when you're cooking with oil and sometimes it's splashing on your hand, you know, and it has that irritating burn. That's what my foot felt like, and I couldn't understand for the life of me why, because, you know, I had a shower earlier in the day, and you know, I made sure my foot was away from many obstacles and objects. And the hospital, I think there must have been a mistake, but they gave me two bags of tablets, of morphine tablets. And I don't take tablets in general, even if I have headaches. And I thought, look, this pain is killing me. I'm going to have to be a wuss and take some of these tablets. I took one pill of this morphine, at about 1 o'clock in the morning. Oh my fuck. I felt like the Wolf of Wall Street. I felt incredible. You know, people have said to me, you know, Wade, be careful because the stuff is addictive. And I can see why, because, you know, you feel on top of the world. I felt like I could take over the world. That was a good feeling I had. It was just a pity it was only at 1 o'clock in the morning, so I couldn't really be productive. Anyway, no Natasha today. She was given some bad news today. A relative back home passed away from corona. So she's not here today, but she'll be back next week. We've got an interesting show. Lots to catch up with in the news. And we've also got a guest coming on later on in the show. He's a guy I used to work with on radio. He's a producer. He's a DJ. And he used to also sometimes produce my shows when I used to get in trouble, when my actual producer wasn't allowed to produce my show. So we're going to have a chat with him, have a catch up with him, because he lives in the Netherlands. And the funny thing is, it's been almost a year and a half and we actually haven't had a chat together. I mean, obviously we chat on WhatsApp, but that's not really chatting. That's more like passing time. And don't tell me sending a voice note is chatting, because that's not. That just shows me you have a lot of time on your hands. Thankfully, WhatsApp has actually given you an option to speed up those conversations, so I don't have to sit there and think about slitting my wrists and listening to these painful conversations. Because I think anything that's over a minute, I'm going to take a long time to reply back to you. You're going to get a reply back in 4 days' time. So what's so important that you cannot phone me or just type to me? So we're going to have a chat with him. It's going to be cool to find out what he's been doing since we lost work together and we last spoke together. So lots of good things to come up on the show today. Some very interesting news. I just want to get into this article. Now, there's some sex workers in Amsterdam, and they are the oldest sex workers. And apparently, they've serviced, according to this article, I prefer pleasured, but all right, serviced. They've serviced more than 335,000 men. Now, apparently, these are Amsterdam's infamous red light district prostitutes. And they're twin sisters. They're called Louise and Martine Fokken. And they've had more than a century of experience between them, and they were crowned with the title of the district's oldest window girls back in 2012. Before they retired. People have also called them Meet the Fokkens, and they even have a book detailing their incredible lives. So it's quite an interesting read this. And it probably wouldn't be a surprise to some that these sisters are in their late 70s and that they have pleasured more than 335,000 men. That's a lot of men to pleasure, don't you think? Right? Don't you think that's quite a lot of men? I mean, I didn't know. I mean, your mouth must get really dry after that. They explained that they spoke about how they got into the sex industry in an interview recently. Apparently, one of the girls was beaten on the streets by her husband in her early 20s. And her husband told her unless she earned money for him, he would leave her. They had children, and I guess she had to do what her husband told her to do. So it's a very interesting story. And something I didn't know about. I mean, you know, obviously you live here, but you don't really follow the taboo stereotypical things here. I mean, I've mentioned this a few times on the show. I've only been to the red light district twice. Once was a friend of mine who I knew in London came over because they'd never been to Amsterdam, and they were like, "Okay, let's go to the red light district. Why not?" And the second time, I actually was in the red light district during the day by accident. A lot of people said, "Yeah, right." No, I was there by accident because I was looking for this cream pie shop, and I couldn't find it. Apparently, it closed down. So, and anyway, I didn't know prostitutes work in the daytime. I didn't know this. I only thought they worked in the evening. So, yeah, I'm not the kind of guy that goes to the red light district in general. And I'm sure quite a few people who know me will vouch for me. I'm not that kind of guy. I'm not interested in this. I don't understand why I need to pay someone to pleasure me. I can do that myself for free. So I'm not the kind of guy who pays for sex and all of that. But it's a very interesting story. So if you have a moment, do yourselves a favor and go and read their book and watch their documentaries. It's called Meet the Falcons. It's a very interesting story, and I'm sure one that you'll be pleased with, and probably you'll learn a lot of things about these 70-year-olds. I mean, who would have thought, you know, 70-year-olds can still pleasure other people. Fascinating. What a week it's been. Men's Health magazine surveyed 1,200 women, and they asked them what their perfect first date is. And they said the most populous response from these women for a first date was a concert. So, yeah, who would have thought a first date, you should take a girl to a concert. You can't now, but maybe a Netflix concert or maybe one of Manny's concerts online you can take them to. What women don't want on their first date? The number one answer, just let the guy talk about himself. Well, I can agree to that because, I mean, I think if a guy talks about himself too much, that just shows his ego. And I think, yeah, that's not really a turn on for anyone. Not even a family member. So very interesting. I was expecting taking them to Nando's, but that wasn't there. And also having sex with them, but that also wasn't in the top 10 as well. So apparently the way to please women, men, guys, gentlemen, boys, dudes, is to take them on a concert. So, yeah. I see everyone in the studio is impressed with that. I think Manny's going to sell a lot of tickets now.
Yeah, probably will.
Because of that. So there you go. You see, you learn new things every day. Take a girl to a concert. Yeah, there you go. All right, let's get into some news before we get into our guest. And I'm sure you guys are going to love listening to this. I am. So I'm sure you guys are going to enjoy listening to this. Now, sticking with the topic of sex workers and all of that, hundreds of sex offenders have managed to change their identity by exploiting a loophole to avoid scrutiny. The Times newspaper reports they've been shown examples of convicted child sex abusers changing their names by deed pool and using their new identity to gain access to children. Men who have been barred for Life from working with children have used their new name to get jobs in schools and homes where they have committed further offenses. Scary, huh? Jesus. Hungary's homophobic leader Viktor Orban has announced a referendum for a law that bans the depiction or promotion of homosexuality for under 18s in the country. The proposed legalization has been criticized for conflating pedophilia with homosexuality and violating EU rules on freedom of expression. Opposition parties in Hungary say the law is just a distraction from domestic scandals. They claim Viktor Orban is secretly a homosexual himself, and he just wants to be the only gay in the village. The phone number of French President Emmanuel Macron and other heads of states and governments have been found in the Pegasus leak this week. Other leaders include South African President Cyril Ramaphosa. He keeps losing his iPhone, so we don't have to worry about him. Apparently, Apple has personally created a special app called He's Done It Again. A man, an idiot, who pleaded guilty to the Capitol riots has been sentenced to 8 months in prison. Paul Hodgkins from Florida spent about 15 minutes inside the Senate chamber, dressed in a Donald Trump t-shirt and carrying a Trump flag. He's the first Capitol rioter convicted of a felony and to be sentenced. CNN says his felony is being closely watched and could influence how other rioters charged with the same felony are punished. Harvey Weinstein pleaded not guilty to rape. No surprises there. The former Hollywood producer has denied having non-consensual sex and sexual assault involving five women. Now, he faces 11 charges of attacking five women between 2004 and 2013. The charges include forcible rape, forcible oral copulation, sexual battery by restraint, should I say, and sexual penetration by use of force. Now, if convicted, Harvey Weinstein could spend the rest of his life in prison, where he'll probably hang himself, just like his best friend Jeffrey Epstein did, and we'll probably never know the real horrors of what he actually did. Argentina has rolled out identification cards for non-binary citizens who neither identify as male nor female, allowing them to use X in their national identity documents and passports. Now, Argentina is the first country in its region, to enable this via decree, joining the list of countries such as New Zealand, Canada, and Australia, which have previously and already carried out such changes. And lastly in the news, a number of COVID vaccination locations have reported people trying to sneak out of the queue after getting a vaccination certificate before the actual shot. The GGD region of Utrecht has said. Now, this is the kind of thing you'd expect to hear in South Africa. Sorry, South Africa, but you can't distance yourself from this. This is just something that you'd hear in South Africa. The health service has increased security at all of its vaccination locations to help prevent this, said a GGD spokesperson. Well, can you believe people actually want to do stuff like this, huh? There was a, when nightclubs opened in the first week of July, I think it was, there were more people getting tested to be able to go to the nightclub than to actually get the jab, which kind of shows you there's a lot of anti-vaccinations and anti-vaccinators here in the Netherlands. It's a shame, really. Just get the fucking vaccine. You'll do everyone a favor. All right, let's get into our interview for today. And on the show now, I don't have a accolade for this guy because he is an accolade, and the only people who have time for accolades are Billie Eilish, and well, anybody heard anything from her recently? No? Yeah, she's probably entertaining her parents, who are both trash cans. So I don't need to give him an accolade because he is one in his own rights. Hey, dude, how are you?
Very well. How are you, Wade?
It's been a while. Manny Sapra, everyone. Now, this guy, I used to work with him on a station called Insanity Radio, and he used to be my producer when my producer was in trouble for stuff that I said. So Manny would have to go and sit in the studio and try hold his laughter because of the stuff I used to say. And we were actually chatting before the interview that my name used to get brought up quite a lot in meetings with management. And I never set out to be controversial. The only reason I actually stood out from the rest was just because I was different. Because to me, giving you a time update when you have this, giving you a weather update when you have this, and telling you what the name of the song is when you have Shazam, why? That's not entertaining. So, you know, I've always set out that, you know, when I worked on radio, I just wanted to be unique. I wanted to be authentic. And people would listen to me because I was myself. So that was the only reason I think I would get into trouble. But we'll get into, you know, I'm sure Manny has many questions for me that he wants to ask that he probably never had the chance to ask me, or maybe he's going to learn something new about me. So good to see you. You're looking good, man.
Yeah, thanks.
Hold back the compliments.
You look better without crutches.
Well, thank you. That's probably the best compliment I've ever been given. So thank you. How was Madeira? Did you find yourself?
A lot of people
go find themselves there.
I did, yes. I found myself and many more things and people. Yeah, no, it was great. It was beautiful. The island was absolutely stunning. I've never seen anything like it. Mm. Yeah, it was five incredible weeks over there. But, you know, I had to return to the Netherlands and it's time to get back to work. Time to get back into the studio, make more music, make more bangers.
We'll tackle, you know, exactly what you're doing and why you made the decision and all of that. Do you want to just bring the mic closer to you because you keep disappearing?
Better now?
Yeah, much better.
Okay.
You know, we're professional here. We're not like a radio station. So, so tell me, so what is the most rewarding thing about being a DJ? Because this is something I could never understand, because I don't really go to nightclubs. I'm not the kind of guy that goes to nightclubs. But to me, whenever I see a DJ at a nightclub, he just looks bored out of his mind.
That's not always true. For me, I like to, when I'm behind the decks in front of a crowd, I like to show the energy. Because you got to remember, when people are in the crowd, a lot of people are looking towards the DJ as well. So it's important for you to be able to show energy. You know, the energy that you put out also reflects in the crowd. Mm. So I think that's important. And if the DJ looks bored, maybe he is. I don't know. I can't relate to that because I'm never that.
No, and thank goodness. Thank goodness, because look, if there's anyone, in fact, I've never said this, but if there's two people who I have a tremendous amount of respect for and time in the industry, one of the people is you.
Thank you.
And the other one is Desmond.
Ah, Badger.
Those are the only two DJs I actually have a tremendous amount of time and respect for, because you guys, I mean, I learned a lot from you guys, but you guys show so much passion in what you do and so much dedication. I've never seen anyone put in the time for your shows as you did when we worked on radio. And Desmond still does that on his show.
Yeah, every week.
Every week, yeah. He still cranks out
2 hours.
2 hours of the best stuff. I mean, it's to me that shows how dedicated he is and how dedicated you are. I mean, I remember you were teaching some people you had a DJ set that you used to train people on. It was the show after mine.
Yeah.
And you got so angry with them, you actually told them to fuck off because they were so useless.
Yeah, it got sometimes to that point, but
it's because you're passionate.
Yeah, I think so. I don't really know where it comes from. I think some of it comes because of Badger. When I first joined Insanity and when I was starting off, the man taught me so much. He gave me some invaluable lessons. He used to come and invite me to the studio during his shows. And it was great. I've learned so much from him. And one of the things was the dedication, the passion that you need for it, and also discipline, because you can't rely on motivation the whole time. Sometimes you might not feel motivated, but you just know you have to do it. That's where discipline comes in. And I think, he taught me that's what makes the good stand out from the great. I'm not saying I'm great. I'm far from it.
Well, if you had to ask me, I don't get me wrong. I'm, and this interview is not here. It's not here to slate DJs, but I do listen to dance music. I listen to a lot of music, but there's just something that when I listen to your set or to Desmond, Badger Smacker is his name. That's why we keep saying Badger. That's his stage name. I honestly generally get a feel for the music. Yeah, you honestly feel like you're a part of that song or a part of that set. And I think that's important.
Yeah, I think so too. I think a lot of times what people don't actually understand is that DJing is not about just putting a couple of songs together and be able to mix them in and out. I think a lot of times it's about telling a story. And that's something that I put emphasis on. And that's something that I know Badger puts emphasis on as well. And the important thing is that people, when they listen to it, they need to be able to connect to it in one way or another. So that's something that I learned from Badger as well. But it's good to hear that you feel that way whenever you listen to me or Badger. I guess it shows that, we know what we're doing.
Look, your track, your track that you released is incredible.
Thank you.
I mean, literally, it's different to what other producers are doing, because a lot of producers now are just remaking songs that were popular in the 90s and then they're putting a beat to it.
That's happening a lot nowadays.
I never thought Whitney Houston you could, get into.
It's easier than you think to do something like that, but it's just something. I think it's a very 2020 trend, making remakes of already popular songs.
But again, you see, now that shows me that you're lazy, because you're not creative. So you're basically taking a song that was popular, and let me just put a beat to it.
Yeah,
you go.
But look at it this way: people are more, a lot of producers. You have to remember this. It started off, I think, in 2019 or 2018. This trend, with the song by Donaro, In My Mind. And I think that's what really kicked it off, but it really picked up in 2020. I think the reason behind that is because a lot of producers, they don't have any more shows to play in front of people. And people are more inclined to listen to something that they're already familiar with, which is why, a lot of people, they put out a lot of remixes on SoundCloud. Yeah, no one's going to listen to a song that you call Stargazing, but if you remix Shawn Mendes and just put the vocal on top of it, people are more inclined to listen to that.
What is your... You don't have a DJ name. You're just Manny Sapra.
Yeah, I just go by my name.
And this is the thing with me, because, this also used to happen with radio DJs. Radio DJs used to have... They were supposed to have a name, like a DJ name. I couldn't. I mean, I had to be authentic. I had to call myself Wade Hutchinson. I mean, there's nothing more authentic and displeasing and dissatisfying than calling myself that. But I had to call myself that because DJ Wade, come on.
I think that has a good ring to it.
Think about it. Now, your entourage is here. They're in the studio. Let's play a game.
Entourage.
Yeah, you've got an entourage here. They are
Yeah, they're
busy on social media, tweeting everything, and
they're my entourage. There you go. You're my entourage. You guys are not employed to. You guys are now employed to Sapra Entertainment.
So they say you get your DJ name. There's a way that you get your DJ name. There's a method. So it's two methods. Mm-hmm. So we can all guess our DJ name. It's the last person you slept with, and the last thing you ate. Go on, let's hear. Come to the mic, let's hear.
Are they a chicken burger?
I will pay to listen to that.
Andrea, double chicken burger.
Yeah, double chicken burger.
Did you have breasts?
It was Fable. So technically Andrea, Fable chicken burger.
All right, what is yours?
George Freeches.
Right. And yours, Manny?
I'm not going to say the first name, but it's going to be something.
All right.
Croquet.
All right. When was the last time you had sex and the last thing you ate?
The last time I had sex was quite a while ago.
And croquettes.
And croquettes.
quite a while ago and croquettes.
That's an album.
Yeah. Well, you
quite
don't.
Quite a while ago.
You don't want to know what mine is. Mine is a very long time ago and a sandwich. I had a sandwich for lunch before I came to the studio. Mm. So a very long time sandwich.
I had a croquette before I came to the studio, so quite a while sandwich.
Quite a while sandwich.
Quite a while croquettes.
Yeah. Andrea breasts. I like that.
Chicken burger.
Chicken burger.
We don't know what the essence of those is. It is Fable.
So that's how you get your DJ name. It's the last person you slept with, and if you can't remember their name, the last time you had sex, and whatever you ate. So there you go. If you're listening to the podcast, it'll be good. I'm sure quite a lot of people are thinking, especially if they're married, the last time I had sex was 2 weeks ago, and McDonald's. 2 weeks McDonald's.
2 weeks McDonald's.
Hmm. Mm. There you go. What is the one thing every song must have for it to be solid? I mean, we touched on people being not very creative and taking a very old song and putting a beat to it. But for you, what is the one thing every song must have for it to be solid?
I think for me, as a producer, I think it needs to have a good groove in the bass line, because when you're out in the club, or when you're out listening to it in the car or on your headphones, the bass line you don't necessarily hear, but it's something you feel. And that's where it needs to start from. If there's groove there, and if it's something that will get you moving, something that you feel that will get you moving, I think that is the bass line for a solid song. But what do you think, Wade? As a listener, as someone that consumes music mostly, what do you think needs to be there for a track to be solid?
You know what I love, and I this is one of the reasons why I listen to Latin music, is because there's so much passion in the song. I mean, mm-hmm. they're not even generally passionate about what they're singing. It's just because of the language. Such a passionate language that I fall in love with it. And I think if I go to a gig or a concert, a DJ concert, I want to be able to feel the music. You know, if you create your own music, I want to be able to feel the energy that you've put into that song.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to, you know, and a lot of people use drugs and all of that to get that feeling. I don't want to have to do that. I want to have that feeling naturally. If I go to one of your concerts or your gigs, I know anyway, but if I didn't know you, I'd want to be like, man, when Manny goes on and he cranks up the bass or the treble, I want to feel that music. And that's what I look for in a song or in a DJ set.
Yeah. No. And
it's like, for example, you know, like when you go to the gym.
Yeah.
You want to get that one song to get you going. That's what I want.
Yeah. And usually the one song that gets you going, the most powerful part in the track is usually the low end or the bass. You know, so that's why I say if it's got groove, if it's got something, if what you feel is right, then that sets the base for a good track.
So let's bring it back a little bit. So what got you into DJing? Because I've never actually asked you this question. What got you into this passion? Because for me, and as I said earlier in the interview, and I've said many times on the show, the reason I got into radio was because I would listen to radio and these DJs telling a story and being so indulged and most times inspired because they were so good at drawing you in, and then you'd be like, wow. So that's why I wanted to work on radio, because I wanted to be able to tell stories. So what got you into DJing?
I think it was just watching other DJs. Just curiosity. I've been going to shows, I've been going to gigs since the moment I turned 18, and it just got to a point where I was like, okay, I kind of want to know what they're doing behind on the stage. And then I sort of just I hit up a guy called Jay Mocchio in Breda, and I was going to him for weekly lessons. And the first time I got there, so he had like a store, a music store, where he had all of these like little controllers, little decks, and then he had like the club standard decks in the back as like a demo. And he was like, I can teach you on either one of these cheap ones, or I can take you straight to the club standard ones that cost like 12 grand, and I can teach you on there. What do you feel comes along? And I said, take me on the big boys. So, and then he just put me behind him. He was like, okay, this is how you do, how you go from one song to the next. Gave me a pair of headphones. Okay, good luck. And just walked away. And then I just from there, I just took it, you know, day by day, or week by week at the time, I must say. I was going there every week, just practicing for a couple of hours. And then that's how I just sort of got into it. Then I bought my first pair of decks.
And how old were you then?
I think I was like 19.
Right. Okay. So a year later.
Yeah. I think I was like 19 or 20. Around that age, I'm not quite sure, and then I bought myself my first pair of decks, was practicing at home, and then I went to Royal Holloway after that, and then I was playing
the Royal Holloway being a
university in London, and I was playing in clubs over there, I was playing weekly on Insanity as well, and it was great, you know, but it's great. But then once I finished university, I sort of took the step into producing. It was the first year of making music is shit.
Because you learn the ropes and all of that.
It's absolutely terrible because you have no idea what you're doing. You can't, everything that you make sounds something out of a Nintendo 64 game. You know, so then I just it's been nearly 3 years now, but 2.5 years into it, and I was at a point where I could start putting out my own music, and now I am, thankfully.
So what do you prefer? Do you prefer producing your music or DJing?
DJing, 100%.
So why produce your music then?
Because you want something to be proud of and to stand out.
Sure.
At the end of the day, people are gonna know your name mostly if they can hear you on Spotify and SoundCloud. And I think that was really my also, because you'll hear a song like the other day, 2 weeks ago, I released a remix of Señorita.
Mm-hmm. By Shawn Mendes. It's on SoundCloud.
Yeah. and when you hear the original, you're like, okay, this is fine. Is nice for the radio. I can't take this and put it and play it in a club. And then I think that was also another one of my motivations. I want to make what I want to hear, and when there's not a lot out there what you want to hear, you can't really do anything else other than sort of take about a scruff of the neck and do it yourself.
Sure.
You know, and I think that was also another one of my motivations. Yeah. And lastly, I don't want to be playing out stuff that others also have. So I think that's the third reason. When you have your own stuff, when you have your own music, that you know that no one else is going to have. I think that's also another thing that will make you stand out.
When you were DJing at various gigs, concerts, clubs, and all of that, I'm sure you've seen some pretty interesting things.
Yeah.
Now, has anyone... tell me, what is the most bizarre thing you've been offered? And what is the most bizarre thing you've seen?
Bizarre thing that I've been offered?
Drugs?
A lot. That wasn't... it was bizarre in the beginning, but then it just became normal. I don't know.
Did some girl with pierced nipples flash you at a club?
That happened quite often. That was also something with or without piercings. That was something.
What do you prefer, piercings or without?
I like the piercings.
Yeah,
I like the
character,
piercings.
Yeah.
I like the piercings. I think it's a bit.
Your entourage edgy. Don't think so.
Entourage, what do you guys think? Piercings or no piercings on nipples?
No piercings. So no, that's piercings. One. No piercings.
No piercings. No piercings for the Brit.
British. What do you expect?
Piercings or no
all
piercings,
piercings.
For the Venezuelan wants all the piercings.
Why not? It's different.
I think it's edgy. Piercings on nipples.
Desensitizes them.
I think the best thing that's ever happened to me was I was at a gig. I was at a concert actually, and this wasn't working on a radio. This was just a concert that I went to, and some girl was really, really drunk. She came. I was ordering a drink at, you know, the stands where you get your drink. She came up to me and says, "Oh, by the way, I have pierced nipples."
Nice.
Like, okay, nice. So, you know, obviously you see these things because you don't see them anywhere else, but mainly that's because of drugs, alcoholism, and all of that. So you're saying, what is the most bizarre thing you've ever seen at a club or a gig at the Royal Holloway?
There's too many to pick from. I think the first one that sort of comes to my mind is rich Arab kids offering me money just to play one song.
Right.
Which didn't happen. Happens less than you think. You got offered £20 quite a lot when I was there. But I think... I was playing a grime set, which wasn't my favorite in the beginning. In the end, I actually started really liking it because of the vibe it brings. Anyways, so I was playing a grime set, and this Arab kid offers me £70.
Hashish.
Huh?
Of hash. £70 of hash.
I would take it to be fair. It'd probably pay me more than what the gig paid me.
Letting out all his secrets.
But he offered me £70 just to play one song.
And what was it? Can you remember?
I think it was Mo Bamba.
Right.
Which I was like, one, it was going to come up in 10 minutes anyways, but I'll take the £70 and play in 10 minutes.
Yeah, I would have just taken it and said, it's coming up in the next hour and wait for him to go home.
That happens sometimes. I did do that sometimes, but I think you know, in terms of you had a lot of people offering you money to play requests, which I took, and sometimes I played, sometimes I didn't.
Now this is something that would drive me insane, and I it was one of the things I hated on radio, is people would sometimes tweet me, "Oh, can you play this song? No, no, phone some other DJ." It was in my contract, so I had to take requests. But I would say, "Oh, sorry, I don't have that song available on the system. Try a better song." But that was one thing I didn't want to do, again, on radio, is take requests. And surely that must irritate you, Manny. Come on. Drunk people coming to you. May, can you play Stacey's Mom?
Yeah, no, I think the weirdest one I had was, "Can you play some love songs?" No. No, no. It's 1 a.m. Yeah. Lady, is the MDMA kicking in?
The mushrooms were kicking in. Not the MDMA, lady, mushrooms.
It's the MDMA kicking in. Yeah. But I think the weirdest request I had, this very clearly stands out, was, can I have some love songs?
What were the songs?
No. Her, that was literally just that. Can you play some love songs?
Right. Okay.
No, I can't.
I'm going to test you on your skills, and I want to see how you react to such a request. So I'm gonna hang on. Let me go into the system here.
What would be the first song to you play if someone came up to you and says, "Play some love songs"?
I will tell them to fuck off.
I think that's the right answer.
And if you don't like what you're listening to, what the fuck are you doing here?
There's multiple rooms for a reason.
Yeah. So, okay. So, let me do this. Hang on. So let me play your new song very quickly. And I'm going to pretend we had a set. Okay.
Okay.
So this is, by the way, this is Manny's new song. It's called Like That. It's on Spotify. And iTunes and all good distributors.
Everywhere.
Do yourselves a favor. Go download it because it's seriously good. I'm not saying that because he's here. I genuinely mean that.
Thank you.
And I even tweeted you.
Yes.
When I tweet did. Something like this.
Yes. When you tweet something like that.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to play something. So let's say we're in a session now. The crowd's getting pumped up. And Manny's just getting into it. And some drunk arsehole comes up. The mushrooms are kicking in. The MDMA is kicking in. Acid. People are crawling on the floor. Some drunk arsehole comes crawling up to Manny and says, "Can you play Ed Sheeran, Thinking Out Loud for my girlfriend?" What are you gonna say to that? What? No? No. All right, that's good.
If this is what she likes, dump her.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's one thing I cannot stand is people who want to try to control you. If you don't like what you're listening to, don't be there. Don't attend it. It's the same as if you don't like what you're listening to now on the podcast or on my radio show, don't listen to me. And this is something I couldn't understand was I used to get, and it's not really a nice way to go by who listens to you on radio, but this is how I used to go by who listened to me on radio was I used to go by how many complaints I would get after the show. Mm-hmm. It's not a nice way to do that, but I always knew that if I didn't get at least 3 complaints from Jamie, who was the then station manager, I knew I didn't do my job properly. It's not a nice way to, you know, tell who listens to you, but I knew that if I didn't get at least 3 complaints, then I had an average show. But basically, I think people would listen to me because they wanted to know what I would do next or say next. And I couldn't understand that because if you don't like me telling it as it is, don't listen to me. It's the same as if you want your song to be played, you're at the wrong concert. You should be at a wedding.
I remember you saying you like to walk on the line when it came to your shows. As in what's allowed and what's not allowed. You used to like to walk on the line.
I used to test the waters.
Yeah.
But I had to, you know.
What made you go in that direction? Where does it come from?
It comes from, as I said, I remember when I was in school. I was in my final year of high school. And, you know, you're at that stage where you either know what you want to do or you're still deciding on your options. Mm-hmm. And obviously I'm this guy in high school who everyone else wants to either be a doctor or a lawyer,
yep,
a proper job. And he has this clown, this tall, stick, skinny person, mm-hmm, wants to be on the radio. So of course I didn't have anything to fall back on, you know, cause you know, if you want to be a doctor or a lawyer or a psychiatrist or whatever, you usually have someone in your family who's either knows someone or is that or does that job. Mm-hmm. I had nothing. So I remember this conversation I had with my principal, and he said to me, "Wade, if you want to be on the radio, you've got to be authentic. Be you, because people will like you for you. Mm-hmm. Don't try to be anyone else, because if you try to be someone else, you're not going to sound like them, first of all, and you're just going to sound like you're trying too hard. Mm-hmm. Just be you, be authentic. If people like you, they will listen to you." And then that was one piece of advice that I still to this day I remember.
And was this in South Africa? Is that where you got your first radio gig?
Well, I created my own radio station in South Africa.
Nice.
Only two people could listen to me, which were my parents, but it was still an achievement. I took it seriously. So that was one piece of advice that I always, to this day, still think about. And that was, you know, what I, that's one thing I always remain true to on my shows, was I wanted to test the limits, because radio, you're supposed to test the limits. And as I said, the only reason why I got in trouble was because no one else was doing what I was doing. And it got to a stage where, you remember my producer, Tarek, or he used to call himself Tushki. Black guy.
Oh, yeah,
I wasn't racist, by the way. I had a black producer, you know, just to get that out there.
Oh, I remember him. He was cool. He was funny.
He was a man of a few words, but he was the kind of producer where I knew that it was going to be a good show because he would laugh. And that's something that's very valuable to producers, radio producers, is when you're planning for the show and they actually have a reaction in a good way, you know that it's going to be a good show.
Yeah.
If it was going to be an average show, he would always go, and then I knew, okay. But it was too late to change anything.
Yeah.
Anyway, I remember it got to a point on my show where it was very predictable in regards to, I almost sort of knew when I would be suspended or when my next suspension would come up, which is a terrible thing to think of. But mm-hmm. I remember once it was during a show. I think it was during an ad break or a song or something. And we were talking in studio and we were trying to figure out when the next suspension would be, because we came to a not necessarily an agreement, but we came to a point where management were literally running out of ideas and running out of things to suspend me for, which I think was true, because some of the things I would get suspended for later on was just ridiculous. I mean, mimicking the Elephant Man is something I always did on my show. I mean, I resemble the Elephant Man, for God's sake. So give me a bit of credit. And I got to, that was never the case. I could get away with that. And then all of a sudden, we're pulling you off air because you made fun of the Elephant Man.
Oh, I don't, okay. Maybe that happened when I wasn't around.
No, I think you already left. You were already in.
Was that the year I left?
Yeah. Okay, so I had no one to back me up. Because
yeah.
I knew that there were a few people. There were a lot of people who hated me at that station. But yeah, what are you going to do? I can't help it if my show is better than theirs. I always knew you had my back. Desmond had my back. And remember Cav?
Oh, he's great. Yeah.
He was, again, one of my producers. He always had my back. And I always knew that if the three of you had my back, I was pretty much guaranteed a short sentence in regards to my suspension, because they usually suspend me for like sometimes 4 weeks. I mean, fuck, what am I going to do with myself for 4 weeks? I went psycho. I went like Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
So basically what I'm trying to say is I went on radio because I wanted to be able to tell stories and I wanted to engage my listeners. And the only way I could engage my listeners was by saying it as it was. And you know, if you got offended, well, that's just too bad. I'm sorry. I'm not here to please people. I'm here to tell a story.
Yeah. If some of the things that did come up was pretty
ridiculous.
It was ridiculous, but you have to, you know, at least from when I was there, I remember there were some things that we all sort of agreed on. This is a bit ridiculous. However, we had to go by the book.
Sure, that I understand, because you know there's certain regulations and all of that. But you know, don't say to me, oh, you know, we champion. This is what they used to say to me towards the end in emails. Oh, we champion freedom of speech. Really? Well, if that's the case, why are you pulling me off air?
Yeah, sometimes it. I'm not.
No, you can say what you want. You're on a free platform now.
Yeah, no, I know. But there were times, even we sit in the boardroom and we think this is a bit ridiculous. However, it's just what Ofcom says. And me and my entourage, we were literally talking about this earlier, and we were saying that Ofcom is, you know, some of the rules that they set and some of the regulations they set
are ridiculous,
are ludicrously soft. And yeah, that.
But you want to know? Here's another example, right? And look, I'm not going to brag on about my show because I'm here to talk to you. Mm-hmm. But I remember I interviewed some girl who had this a passion for sex, and I had her on the show, and I asked her a lot of questions. You know, what's the best way to satisfy a woman and all of that? Oh no, that was fine. Mm-hmm. I could ask questions like that. I was shitting myself after that interview because I thought, oh, here we go. Nope, I didn't get one complaint, one email. I mimicked the elephant man. And that got me in trouble. So there were a lot of things that didn't make sense, but that gets me to my point where I think management just ran out of things to suspend me for, like proper reasons. But anyway.
It was a fun time regardless.
Look, I always remained very, you know, very true to what I did. But anyway, how do you deal with online abuse? You know, when someone is horrible to you about something you've just created, how do you deal with that? Because to me, I just throw it back in their face. But that's just me. How do you deal with stuff like this? Because obviously you're going to be creating much more, and you are going to get people who say, oh, Manny, that was shit. I can shit better than that music that you've just made.
Oh, I've had a couple of that already. Believe it or not.
But how do you deal with that? Because a lot of people don't expect this from people. Because a lot of people, I'm not saying you, but there are people who create stuff, put it onto social media, and then, you know, the whole thing about social media is to get reactions from people, to get their opinions, and 85% of the time it's negative, horrible trolls, and they're not expecting this. So how do you deal with this kind of stuff?
I literally just ignore it. You can shit on my content, you can shit on my music however much you want, but you know, I believe in what I make, I believe in my vision, and I just take it and run with it. If I have 100 people saying to me, this is great, and I have 3 saying to me, this is shit, it's going to be, you know, clearly it's not what I'm creating is shit, it's your taste.
I agree.
You know, so, and I'm not saying everyone has to like or love what I make. That's not the point, you know.
But social media also gives people a chance to hide, so they can, and this is the thing about Twitter. This is what I hate about Twitter is they don't even necessarily have to upload a picture because they can just have that stupid egg, and then say something. And then when you want to see who this fucking arsehole is, like, who is this arsehole? And you click on them and they've got an egg. Or they've got a stupid picture from Google. You can't even see who they are. So Twitter gives people that opportunity to voice their opinion, and not necessarily you can't see who they are. So it gives people a chance to hide.
Yeah, but I think it's also important to have a bit of a thick skin,
which a lot of people don't have in the industry.
Yeah, and you know, it's like I said, it's important to have a thick skin. I just don't dwell on it. I literally, if I read something like that, okay, whatever, continue, you know, continue scrolling. that's just my approach. You know, I know a lot of people that get upset and you know, and I guess when it comes at you, when you have 100,000 followers and hundreds and hundreds
and hundreds. You just need that one person to, they don't even necessarily have to say your music is shit. They can just use a certain word.
Yeah. The thing is, if it doesn't just have to be one, but when that one turns into 100, you know, that's when it starts getting the problem. If you don't have something nice to say, just shut up. You know, that's if you have criticism or constructive criticism, that's a different story. But if you're just gonna be terrible, first of all, if someone has a time for that, you know.
Well, I'll tell you one good thing about Twitter is that they have the mute button, which is great.
Yeah.
Because you can mute people and they can say as much as you want. They don't know you've muted them.
Yeah.
It's great. So look, I think online abuse is a terrible thing. I mean, don't get me wrong. As I said, I've voiced my opinion on many things on social media. People comment. Sometimes I throw it back at them.
How do you deal with it?
I just throw it back at them. You know, if you know, a lot of people say, "Wade, it's because you invite these people to do it." No, because I'm voicing my opinion on something. If you don't like it, don't comment. If you want to comment, fine. I'm just gonna, you know, fight it at you. I mean, one very good example was, this was still last year during the transitional period during Brexit, and there was this one stupid Brexiteer who, he was following a, this is what I don't understand about Brexiteers. They claim they hate Europe and everything about Europe, but yet they're more interested in what the European politicians are doing.
It's funny, they never hated anything about the EU before Brexit even got mentioned.
No, and this is the thing. I said something, I can't remember what it was. This arsehole commented on whatever I said, and of course I looked at his profile because I wanted to see who he was. He was following Jean-Claude Juncker, Michel Barnier, the chief negotiator, and some other pro EU people, and obviously he was following Boris Johnson and the Conservatives. So I said to him, well, look, you claim to hate Europe, but why do you follow all these people who are pro-European? Because if you have no interest in Europe, why do you want to know what's going on in Europe?
Mm-hmm.
So he says, oh, it's because, you know, they're part of the negotiations. Okay, fine, but you're still following what's going on.
Yeah.
In Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And he tweeted back, but I muted him because I have no time for that, because you claim that you hate Europe.
I'm always up for a discussion or a debate. But when it's just blind ignorance,
sure,
I can't deal with that, you know.
Anyway, the main reason I got you here,
mm-hmm,
not to talk about trolls and all of that. What is the reason you started this venture? Tell me. I want to know, because I haven't actually asked you. I've been following your progress on social media. So what got you started into going it alone?
I don't know. I've always been a bit of a solo venturer. But I mean, making music is something I've always wanted to do. It's just I decided to go to university first. And then, whilst I was there, I always said to myself, when I finish university, when I get out of here, that's the first thing I'm going to do is learn how to make my own music. So I did. May I got out, and June, a month later, I started making my own music.
So it wasn't like a spare of the moment thing. You actually had this planned, what you want to do when you leave.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, which sometimes makes you wonder, why do I even go to university?
But that's, well, I mean, that I ask myself the same question. I think my dad is still asking himself that question, why he spent all that money on me for no reason, because I've landed up being a DJ. So,
Same story with me. Except ask myself, why did I put myself in that much debt?
So, we won't go into that.
So, no, it was something I've always wanted to do.
And it's a good feeling, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the first year was just terrible. The first year was just frustrating. But that's with
any business that you start, whether it's a cafe, whether you are making T-shirts, whatever, it's going to be. I've always said that anyone who starts their own business, mm-hmm. it's going to take at least a year, maybe a year and a half before you can actually start, not necessarily paying yourself,
yeah,
but actually making profits. And this is the thing about what we're doing here is, you know, a lot of people thought that, you know, we would be rolling in money at the moment. These things take time. And I'm in it for the long run. I'm not here for a year. And then, oh, well, it didn't work. Only so many people listen to me. Oh, well, no, I'm here for the long run. I'm here because I can see a future in this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's keeping me going with this. You're doing it for the future, right?
Yeah. Like I said earlier, you know, you just have to sort of trust the process, trust your vision.
Be patient. I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah. Also, I think what something that I, like I said, I thought the first year was terrible. However, what I discovered later down the road is how to really enjoy the process of the whole building process of it. You know, don't just enjoy the finished article. Actually, learn to enjoy the process of when you're building the blocks. And once I realized that, all of a sudden it just turned, you know, fantastic and magical. Yeah, like now, any sort of free moment, free hour, I have, it just goes into that. I take my laptop everywhere with me, even on the way here on the train. You know, I was yeah. doing, I was making music. So, yeah, it's you. Like I said, just trust yourself, trust your vision, run with it, and learn to enjoy the process.
Sure. I mean, I'm lucky because I have a team behind me who believe in the vision. Most of it is I've drugged them, but no, they generally believe in, you know, this vision. If it wasn't for them, this would have still been an idea.
Because
mm-hmm. the thing with me is I can make content, but to actually make something like this, what we're doing, and giving shows to people and running a company, that's totally different to me. This is alien to me.
Mm-hmm.
And every day I'm learning, you know, the pros, the cons, the heartaches, yeah. You know, there's been times, especially in the beginning, where I thought, what am I doing? But that's part of it. That's all part and partial of it.
Yeah, it's okay to feel a bit lost sometimes, you know, but when you have a good group of people around you that, you know, you can trust and you know, you can lean on, you know, and it's also important. I always say this, it's always important to have that group of people around you, just so you know, as you rise, it's not just about just you rising, it's everyone elevates together.
Yeah, well, it's not, I mean, it's also mainly because what I think what also pushes me is that I have a producer who's very honest, and I've encouraged her to be very honest, because that's how I perform best. And she always tells me I'm a rubbish person, I'm a rubbish presenter, and that's what keeps me going. You know, there'll be shows where she'll be like, Wade, you're such a useless DJ, you're rubbish, just stop doing this, just get a proper job.
Mm-hmm.
She's very honest. I love Natasha for this.
It's good. Yeah, good.
She gives, you know, proper criticism, you know, criticism.
Sometimes it's what you need to hear, not what you want to hear.
Exactly. I live on negativity.
Yeah.
It makes you a better person.
You're the kind of guy, knowing from experience, you're the kind of guy that bounces off it. You know, and
I wouldn't say that, but I just know how to deal with it more than people on radio. I don't run to management when I get a negative comment on Twitter. And someone's told me how shit my show is, because to me, if you listen to me, and this is the thing, I mean, you said something to me before we started. Apparently, I said something about the Labour Party or something. I don't even remember.
Oh, yeah. I think what that did I say? I think that was one of my favorite moments from you. If you want to live in a warm home, vote Labour.
I can't even remember saying that. But the problem with me is I say things in general and I don't remember it. And even worse, when I would say something on my radio show or on my podcast. Mm-hmm. And the thing about a podcast is people will listen when they want to. So yeah. I will say something 2 months ago and someone will say, oh, wait, I listened to your show and I can't even remember I said that, but I said it. But the thing with me is I listen. That's the difference between me and a DJ is I actually listen to what people say.
Mm-hmm.
I encourage you to be honest because if you think I'm shit, it gives me the opportunity to be better. I don't go running to management and saying, oh, Manny was an asshole to me. What are my fake figures? And then I'll draw up a piece of diagram that tells me all lies that, oh, this many people listen to you. It's all bullshit. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what's the most rewarding thing about being a DJ? What's the most rewarding part? Is it the money? Is it the woman that you get? I'm sure DJs, to their credit even now, but before in the early 2000s, were like rock stars. I mean, they were probably bigger than rock stars. So, you know, a lot of girls would offer their services to you. So what's the most rewarding part? Is it just pleasing the crowd? Is it women throwing themselves at you? Is it making the music? What is the most rewarding?
I think for me.
Is it all three?
I think for me, you know, I got into this not for the money, not for the women, for absolutely nothing, but because of my passion. And I think to see 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 people I've had in the past, you know, just going crazy in front of me, I think that's the most rewarding side of it. And also the fact that, you know, you can really live your passion. And it's not just something, you know, it's actually tangible. It's something you can do and perform in front of people and showcase what you're about. I think for me, that's really the rewarding thing about it all. And that's really the only reason I got into it. And then slowly a passion turned into an obsession. I love what I do, and yeah, it's great. It's great. I think that's really the most rewarding thing about it.
So you got into it because you love it. Mm-hmm. You know, you never got into it, and this is the problem I have with radio DJs is, especially now, apart from the fact that they're talentless, but the reason they get jobs on radio is because they have a 10,000 Twitter followers, or they host Love Island.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, because you do that, or you have so many followers, you should be on the radio.
Yeah.
And that's the wrong thing. This is the thing I have a serious issue with, is I did radio because I have a passion for it. I have a passion talking to people. I have a passion telling stories to people. You have a passion for creating amazing music and uplifting the crowd and pleasuring the crowd with, you know, all the stuff that you do. I mean, look, if there's one thing I wanted to do, speaking of pleasuring crowds, is I would, if I'm
335,000 crowd.
I'm not good at DJing. We all know this. And I'm not afraid to admit this, but if I was a DJ, what I would do is my party trick was instead of using my hands to, you know, what do you call this?
Mixer. And faders, yeah.
Yeah, if instead of using my hands, I would just stand up and use my penis and just, that's what I would do. That's be my party trick.
I think, yeah. I think it will work. I think it will work.
It'll disguise the fact that I'm shit because people will just be like, oh my God, look what he can do with his penis. That's my name, that DJ Penis.
That would be impressive.
DJ Penis, that's my name.
That would be impressive. Not the name if you can actually mix with just your penis.
Oh, I'm sure it can be done.
I haven't tried. Yet.
You've got some homework, man.
Ah, shit, here we go again.
Take it off a beatport, you'll be on Pornhub next.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I know a DJ who, her name is Alison Wonderland,
I know that DJ.
Yeah. And she, because YouTube took, she put a set up on YouTube and YouTube took it down.
So she went on Pornhub. Instantly.
So she uploaded it on Pornhub. And she was like, hey, I'll just release a new set. Well, I can't put it on YouTube. Go watch it on Pornhub.
And people, and thanks to her, people listened to her set while making love. Passionate love. Erotic. With themselves or with their partner. With, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just them and their beloved right hand.
Mm. Or their left hand.
Or their left hand.
Yeah.
Sorry, hands. All hands matter.
What can we expect from you next? What else? What have you got in the pipeline for us? What can you tell us? Spill the beans. Come on.
I've got a couple of releases coming up. I've got two.
Are you going to be performing? Obviously, depending on COVID. Are you going to be performing anywhere? Any things lined up? Any gigs?
No, I don't think so at the moment. COVID, they really doesn't leave a lot of opportunities, I don't think, at the moment. But I've got a couple of releases coming up on Spotify and SoundCloud. So, you know, I'll be putting some stuff up on there. Maybe a new live set up on YouTube soon as well at some point in the next couple of weeks.
So just work.
Work.
That's what I love about you. You're so dedicated to what you do.
Thank you.
Hey, dude, listen, it's been a pleasure. I know we got off topic a little bit. But this is what I love about podcasting is we can do this.
Oh, it's great.
It was good to get into your mind because I've worked with you. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing about when you work with someone, whether you work with them on the radio or you are an accountant or whatever, you don't necessarily get to have these conversations with that person at work. But it's been great to get into your mind and to see the real Manny Sapra.
Thank you. It's been great being here. Thank you for having me.
I always thought you were this crackhead who used to come onto the station and just do a few sets and then go home. But you're more than that.
Yeah. Thanks. Hmm. I mean, I think the crackhead bit might just be correct. But no, it's been great. It's been great being here. Thank you for having me, Wade.
No, it's good. It's good to catch up. And do yourselves a favor. Go and download, go and like, go and listen to Manny's new song. It's called Like That. It's his first song. It's his first production that he's made. I love it. You can find it on Spotify, iTunes, where else? Beatport,
Deezer, Amazon Music,
and
everywhere.
You get paid for this, right?
Yeah, hopefully.
You better get to whoever you're independent or you have a label.
This was released by a label.
Okay, well, you better get onto them and be like, hey, bitch, better have my money.
Oh, no. Oh,
get your royalties.
No.
You don't want to be Taylor Swift and take your music off.
I don't doubt them. It's more about, you know, it's more about how much comes in and numbers. But that's a different story. But I don't doubt the label. I think they're great. They've done a lot for me as well.
Well, look, it's been a pleasure having you. Do yourselves a favor. Go onto Spotify, iTunes, or all good outlets. Go and listen to Manny Sapra's new song called Like That. Not That. That.
D-A-T.
D-A-T. You'll be blown away. And I don't say that often about people who make music because, as I said, you know, it's more copy and paste nowadays. You'll literally be blown away about with what he's made. So go and follow him on social media. It's the great thing about you is you have the same name everywhere. So go follow him on social media, Twitter, Instagram. And it's been good having you, dude.
Yeah, it's been really nice being there. After a long time, we've managed to sit down in the studio and create something.
Yeah, we've actually managed. Who would have thought after a year and a half? And we live in the same country. We finally got this together.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been fun. It's been fun. And we should do this more often.
Don't be a stranger. You want a show? Do you guys want a show?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, I've got slots available. What do you want to talk about? Let's very quickly. What do you want to talk about if I gave you a show?
I'm probably the angriest person you've ever met.
I think there's a show for that.
Yeah.
This is a right-wing thing coming, Carla.
What do you think?
Oh, What do you think about? Well, you say you.
Well, you've got the purple on, so you can be the Hulk. You can be the podcast Hulk.
You say you say that you hate everyone. So what do you think of Maduro, since you're from Venezuela? Well, the Hulk's coming out of him.
Sounds kind of real low.
As bad as it's gonna sound, Venezuelans deserve it just for being. Wait, what's my use of language? Do I need to be?
Oh, you got a free speech platform here. Okay.
Venezuelans in general are highly entitled cunts. They deserve what they're getting. As much as my own family is affected, they still deserve it.
Hmm. Spoken so passionately. That's what you're Latin. That's what I love about this. I would listen to this podcast.
I am a very entertaining angry man. Mm.
That would be the name of your podcast, The Very Entertaining Angry Man.
Yeah.
On Amsterdam Lab. Cool. Thank you, Manny.
Thank you, Wade.
Right. Have yourselves a terrific weekend. Try not to fall over like I did. And we'll be back next week.